have to warn you before we start that we are experiencing very high winds right now in Toulouse. And I'm in a very high building. So, if you hear like a lot of whistling like that, it's unfortunately the wind. And our upstairs neighbor hasn't secured their shutters. So if it gets to be too much where you're like, oh, the sound quality is just not good and it's like banging back and forth, we can just reschedule if we need to. Because who knows? It's unfortunate. And unfortunately, the unit above us is not regularly inhabited. So we can't just go knock on their door and be like, hey, can you guys fasten your shutters? Oh, France. Yeah.
I love it, but this is the stuff I want to hear. You know what?
Yeah.
What happens. We will make the best of it.
All right.
Yeah, we'll just see what happens. But hey, this isn't life. This is what this is.
You're listening to The Enterprising Expat, stories of women who packed up their lives and moved abroad for love, a job, or a fresh start. What does it take to build a new life and business in a new country? What does it take to go from finding your feet to thriving? Find out how each woman did it. Be inspired. Whether you're an expat or digital nomad, to bloom where you're planted.
It was your business birthday, right? I count November 1st kind of as my anniversary date for Taste of Toulouse because that was the day that my website went live last year. So.
Oh, wow. Well, fantastic. That's a cool milestone.
Yeah. It was really awesome.
Thank you for the heads up. And welcome to The Enterprising Expat. Introduce yourself. Tell me who you are and then tell me what you do.
My name is Jessica Hammer, and I am the founder of Taste of Toulouse. It is the first walking food tour company in Toulouse, France. And I do walking food tours around the city center of Toulouse in English to allow English speakers to have the experience that I wish I would have had here when I first moved to Toulouse in terms of being able to break down that barrier between the locals here and all of the amazing businesses and artisans that we have here in Toulouse and the English speakers.
Super. Let's start in the US. Tell me a little bit about, because you grew up in rural Michigan, correct?
Yes. To kind of back things up, I tell people that I was kind of born into the food industry. Because I grew up on a blueberry farm in Southwest Michigan, and my family are a family of farmers and entrepreneurs. A lot of times when you're a farmer, you basically are running your own business. So, that's the kind of environment that I grew up in. One of the things that I always remember growing up is, you know, everybody else always went on these big, huge summer vacations. And, that was never when my family went on vacation because that is the middle of blueberry season. So we always took vacations in like January and February.
Cool. So where did you go when you went on vacation?
Frequently we would go to industry conferences because the farmers obviously work in the spring, fall, and summer, and then they go to meetings all winter. And very frequently have those meetings in very warm locations like Florida, for example. So
that works. That works.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty good deal being in Florida in February. Better than Michigan anyways.
Looking back at all of that, the way you grew up and the place that you grew up, how do I say, does it give you a different set of social skills, do you think, if you grow up in a rural area versus if you're just in a city?
A different set of social skills.
Or a different way to I don't know. Are you more accepting of people and their weird quirks if you grow up in a smaller place?
No, I don't. I don't really think that is what brought that to me. Because to me, in my mind, I feel like cities tend to be a lot more accepting of of kind of strange people and their weird quirks, because, you know, everybody has to get along a little bit more when you live in the city, because you're so much closer together and you kind of like learn a little bit more to like live and let live there. It's interesting to have kind of been in both situations, you know, growing up in such a rural area and then coming to live in a big city. Cause I lived as you were saying, I lived in Chicago for 11 years before moving to Toulouse. It's interesting. I think I found for me, like what I enjoy is living in a city, but in what feels like more of a small town community. Whether that's like a neighborhood in that city, or for me, it's like, going to the markets here. Because I've been doing food tours for a year now, everybody kind of knows me and, you know, knows what I'm doing. And it's very much a community there.
Okay. So was it a little bit overwhelming when you moved to Chicago, or were you like, this is it, I found my place?
I loved it. As much of, I guess, you can never really take all of the country out of the girl. Right. But I had always wanted to live in a city. contrasted with some other my family who are like, oh, Jesse, are you sure that you really want to do that? Like, we'll come visit you, but we would never want to live there. But I really loved living in the cities. Not downtown, obviously, but like in the neighborhoods where you have access to all of the, you know, all of the culture, all of the different kinds of food, all of the like diversity of experiences and perspectives. Like, that is what was really exciting to me about living in the cities.
Have you always been a foodie? Like, through college, you were the one who was trying the more ethnic restaurants and things like that?
I think in some ways, yes. But it didn't really occur to me for quite a long time, even maybe until about, I don't know, between 5 and 7 years ago, where I had kind of started to discover food tours in other places as I was going on vacations. And I was like, you know, actually, so many of my like earliest memories from going on vacations with my family were what we ate when we went to those places. And, you know, the experiences of like getting together around a table and kind of knowing different places by the foods. And, you know, and then going to college and being living in a small city when I went to college, but then having access to a lot more diverse foods. I remember having Indian food for the first time at university and being like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. How have I never had this? And coming from a small town, where about the most, you know, the most exotic that you can get is Mexican food. Yeah. It was just like, wow, you know, you can really, even if you can't afford to travel, you can travel the world through all of these different foods.
Okay. Yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah. Do you know what? I have been in the US for 3 years and I am still looking for great tacos.
Really?
even though I live like close to Washington, mm-hmm. DC, I have been underwhelmed.
Oh man. I've
had so far. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I know they're out there. I'm looking.
There was just a new Mexican restaurant that opened up in Toulouse, that is run by some guys who are from Mexico. And I'm just overjoyed about it because France is not known for having good Mexican food. And I now have like a solid option where I can get like tacos with corn tortillas, and you can even order micheladas. And it's amazing.
Because I kind of feel like people in the US take for granted that you just have access to like Mexican food. And I'm like, no, for the rest of the world, this is So I need to find out like a good spot so I can really get into it. We are now through college and you are working in Chicago. Tell me about your career. Did you ever feel defined by the positions that you had in your career? Was it always about the next level, being promoted, things like that?
Yes and no to your questions. So most of the time, so as I said, I lived in Chicago for 11 years. For almost 9 of those years, I worked for the Andersonville Chamber of Commerce, which is a chamber of commerce on the far north side of Chicago that works in this wonderful little neighborhood that's full of all of these small local businesses. And I did marketing and event planning for them. I started out as I guess you could say, program assistant, and eventually worked my way up in the organization. As I said, I was there for almost 9 years, eventually becoming their director of marketing. So I didn't feel like it was so much the job title that defined me, but after a while, when you've worked in an area like that for so long, you know, kind of generally what I did there began to define me. Like I was the person who I was very much like the face of the neighborhood. My joke now, looking back on it, is that I was kind of like the tour guide for the neighborhood. Yeah, because I, you know, was sending out the monthly email updates with all of this information about what was going on. I was doing the social media. I was sometimes even giving tours for like concierges and reporters and people wanting to know like what's all of the new things in the neighborhood, what's going on here. I loved the job. It was really like a dream job for me. I loved the people I worked with. I loved the neighborhood. But after a while, when you start, I started to get really burnt out by it and feeling like I was really, after a while, defined by not necessarily the job title or feeling like I had to keep moving up, but defined by my connection to that place.
Did you ever think about sort of leaving and going to another company, or was it a burnout that was just like, I need to make a dress?
You know, I think kind of by time I realized what it was and what was going on, I was burnt out enough where I was to the point where it was like, I don't know what I want. Like, I don't know what's next, but I know that I can't keep doing this because I just don't have any more to give it. You know, it's been a great run and it's time to peace out because I can't keep doing this to the level that I need to. And so I left that position and I took about six months off working. Thankfully, my husband had a job where we were able to kind of like cut back on expenses and just say, okay, you know, it's not a forever thing. It's just that I need some time to kind of sit back and be like, okay, what's next?
Sometimes we're so busy just rushing through every day. We don't stop and think, do I do I want to do it for the rest of my life? How is my mental health?
Yeah. Actually? And after I stopped, I was like to the point in the burnout where like my body, about 2 weeks after my last day at work, I got sick and I was sick for a month. With really nothing more than maybe like a cold and maybe a sinus infection. But like, I was just miserable on the couch for about a month, where my body was like, and we're taking a time out. Which kind of then went along with like, okay, then if your body's just sitting here being miserable, then it leaves your mind to kind of be like, okay, what's going on? What are we going to do next? Like, and then you kind of come to terms with the fact that this thing that defined you for so long, like it's not there anymore. And so your mind's like, okay, what do we do now?
Yes. Was that frightening? Did you feel like you wanted to get just heal physically from, you know, the tiredness and then kind of find another job in that same arena? Or were you at the point where I need to do something different, even if I don't?
Well, for the first few months, it was like so much about like physical and mental recovery. In the midst of being sick, I kind of came to the point where I realized I needed to start seeing a therapist to kind of help me really work through a lot of these issues that I had been just kind of putting off. And kind of, you know, what do you do when the thing that has started to define you for so long, like when you don't have it anymore, you know, like, where does that leave you? You know, so I spent a few months kind of really working through that, like, physical and mental recovery, and then kind of trying to figure out, okay, well, what's next? And at that point, my husband and I were kind of thinking along the lines of, you know, maybe in the next couple of years is a good time for us to think about moving abroad. And we had been talking about this, and he said, you know what, why don't you have the time, like, why don't you find a way to do some traveling? And at first I was like, are you serious? Like, you want me to like travel around without you? And he was like, yeah, I think it would be really good for you. So once I got past like kind of a lot of, you know, like feeling like I like didn't deserve to do this on my own, it was such an amazing gift. I ended up finding what they call a workaway, which is like a work exchange, in a few different places in France. I spent 6 weeks in France. Almost 4 weeks were in a small town just outside of Toulouse, because Toulouse was the city that we were looking at the time for his work contacts. He's a dancer, and why we're here in France is that he got a artistic visa to pursue his dance work here. And this is where he had his professional contacts. And so we were looking at Toulouse, and he says, see if you can find anything around Toulouse. And I was able to. So I spent about 4 weeks in a small town outside of Toulouse. And then I spent a couple weeks traveling around to other cities. And I just fell in love with it. It was kind of like a test run to be like, hey, you know, you think you might like living in France, but would you really like it? You know, are you okay with like how they shop there and just kind of like the everyday life? And the answer at the end of it was really kind of a resounding, like, yes, I love the lifestyle here. I don't speak the language as well as, you know, I'm not fluent in French. I was even less fluent when we moved here. But that 6 weeks kind of gave me some distance and some perspective about what was going on. And at the end of that, when I got home, I took a few more months off of work, during the summertime, helping my mom get her business up and running. She started an Airbnb, that summer, a bed and breakfast out of her home and on Airbnb. So I spent a lot of time, helping her kind of do a lot of painting and decorating and things like that. But then at the end of the summer, I got a job in one of Chicago's best cheese and wine shops. Because what I had discovered, well, before that trip to France, we had been to France before, and I had met French wine and cheese and fell in love, as you do.
Absolutely.
And so I had, of course, enjoyed my fill of it while I was in France that year. And, was like, yeah, you know, let's see. This is something that you're really interested in. This is something that really lights you up. Let's just kind of see where it can take you. And so I spent a year working in a cheese and wine shop in Chicago and learning as much as I could about it. I was probably a little bit obsessive. Some of my coworkers, I'm sure, were like, why are you like, okay, Jess, like, this is interesting, but you're taking it a little bit far sometimes. But no, I loved anything, you know, anything that anyone could teach me about it, anything that I could like look up on the internet, any books that I could read, you know, I was kind of just like a sponge taking it all in. And I discovered also that it wasn't just the learning that excited me, but it was, being able to share that with other people on the days where I could share a story about one of our artisanal producers and, you know, get my customers as excited as I was about that cheese, or suggest a cheese and wine pairing to them that made them just go like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Or be like, have you ever thought about pairing these two things? And they're like, no, but let's try it. And that's really cool. You know, so getting other people as excited as I was about it was like the best part of my day.
But is that you generally, once you find something, you're like the researcher and you're sort of, I want to know everything?
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a compulsive researcher. This is kind of a funny thing that I learned about my husband and I a few years ago, as I was asking him to do something and he's like, oh, but I have to, you know, but like, how do I figure out how to do that? I'm like, well, you just Google it. He's like, but that's so annoying. He apparently hates Googling things, researching things online. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's the best thing ever. You can just type it in Google and find the answer. Yeah. So needless to say, I definitely go down the internet rabbit hole a lot in searching for interesting facts about different kinds of cheese. Sometimes, like, I'll have people on my tours ask me a question about a cheese that we have maybe, or just something that, some facet of that that I hadn't thought about before. And I'm like, I'm not sure, but let me get back to you about that. And then down the rabbit hole I go.
Perfect. Yep. Perfect. I want to go off on a tangent with the cheeses. Is there one that's got like an interesting backstory behind it, or one that's been made the same way for like hundreds of years by, I don't know, blind monks or something?
One of the cheeses that I think has a really funny story is Reblochon, which is a soft washed rind cheese, and it's from Savoy in the Alps. And how they first started making it was that in the medieval period, a lot of this area was ruled by medieval lords, of course, who had like tenant farmers that were working with them. And so the tenant farmers had to give them, you know, a certain portion of the milk from their cows that they had produced. And the wily farmers discovered that they didn't have to milk the cows all the way the first time, that they could pretend to milk their cows partially. And then after the lord's henchmen had left with their portion of the milk, the farmers could go back to their cows and actually finish milking them. And what happened was that the milk that was milked the second time was actually more rich than the first milking. And so they used it to make this cheese called Reblochon, because it really means like to milk it again.
Okay. That is very cool.
Yeah.
I love
that. And it's just like a really funny story about like, I love those kind of stories about, you know, we don't really think sometimes about like the way things are. We tend to take it for granted that,
yes.
But a lot of times there's some sort of like historical reason for why things are the way they are.
Yes. Yes. That, and I absolutely love that. I think anything that is artisanal generally has a kind of backstory and history, and that's a very cool facet of things. Thank you. That was cool. Okay, so
all right,
back on the road again. So now you both decide that. How long did it take the pair of you to decide that actually this is not just something we're throwing out in the air? We're gonna go to France. Mm-hmm. We're gonna try and make it. We're making this decision.
Well, so we've been married over 13 years now. And ever since we first got married, we had talked about like, oh, you know, at some point we want to try living abroad for a prolonged period of time, like at least a couple of years. So this has been kind of something that was like on the back burner for a while. And then about, I would say, 3 or 4 years ago, we were both kind of to the point in our careers in Chicago where we were starting to think, you know, maybe like we don't have as much to tie us here anymore. And so we decided that, you know, let's start like looking and seeing what sort of opportunities are out there, what sort of visas are available for different things that we could do. And we discovered that France had this option for a type of artistic visa. It's called the passport talent visa, and it applies to artists in certain cases. And he was able to build he was able to create a proposal and give them enough documentation that they awarded us the visa. So we've been seriously pursuing it for prior to when we moved, I'd say 2 to 3 years, but then it took us about 1 year from when we said, okay, yes, let's do this and let's start putting together the visa application until when we actually moved.
Thank you for listening to The Enterprising Expat. You can help the show grow and reach more people by sharing this episode with your friends, supporting us on social media, or leaving a rating and review in whatever your favorite podcast catcher is. You guys get to Toulouse, and what happens? How do you find your accommodation?
Our first couple of months here were kind of rough. It was definitely oh my goodness, what have we gotten ourselves into? So we rented an Airbnb for the first while that we were here, to kind of give us enough time, we thought, to find an apartment. We knew that finding an apartment here was going to be difficult because in France, landlords tend to be very, very, very cautious about renting to people. And for good reason, because it takes about 3 years to evict someone for non-payment of rent. And you legally cannot evict someone from November until March because it's the winter. Yeah. Yeah. Legally. So for good reason, they want to be sure that people have work contracts and that they have the ability to pay and all of those kind of things. And so it's really, really difficult to find an apartment here if you don't have a work contract, which we didn't. As I was said, even though we could prove to them that we had the funds to support ourselves, we didn't have work contracts, so a lot of places just didn't even call us back. Thankfully, in France, it's all about who you know. And we found an apartment through the family member of a friend who thankfully had a place opening up. And so we had to spend about an extra month in an Airbnb waiting for this place to open up and to be redone because, of course, the person who it is in that apartment before completely trashed it. Again, why they are cautious. But thankfully, yeah, we were able to find an apartment through the friend. And we were taking very intensive French classes 5 days a week, which was great and a lot of progress, but also really exhausting to be in an immersive atmosphere like that. And then come home and have to do homework and things like that. And also spending a lot of time, like, you know, everything's new. Everybody's new. You don't realize how much easy small talk and anonymous personal connections you take for granted in everyday life when you can't make those anymore. Where, like, you can't participate in small talk because you don't understand what they're saying. You can just, like, nod and shake your head. And even going to the grocery store is an ordeal because you don't know how they're organized. You don't know what the names of all of these things are yet. And so, like, every interaction is, like, exhausting. Including ones with English speakers as well, because you're meeting all of these new people that you've never met before. And, you know, it's kind of like the first days back at university and, like, trying to find your friend group and everything. The first few months here, it was rough, and really exhausting. I'm glad it's over. I'm so thankful for the friends that we've made. Luckily here in Toulouse, we're the headquarters for Airbus, which is the huge airplane manufacturer, and their official work language is English. Yeah. We're also the third largest university town in France, and so we have a lot of English speakers through that as well. And so there is like a really great expat English speaking population here. And so it's relatively easy to find friends and make connections with people. The downside of that is that a lot of them end up leaving very soon. But it was like, we made friends a lot more quickly than I had expected. So that was good.
Yeah. Yeah, I find that I say it quite a bit, but when I move to a new place, I give myself 6 months to actually get to know people, find out the lie of the land, and 1 year to feel settled. Anything less than
just isn't. Yeah, I think that's a really good estimate.
How did the idea for a business come about? Like, was it just like, I need something to do, I'm going crazy staring at the walls, or was it you'd already started thinking about it?
Well, it was something that had been in the back of my head as we were moving here. Kind of how I was introduced to French wine and cheese to begin with was through a food tour in Paris that we had taken when we visited there in 2015. And it really just opened my eyes to all of this French wine and cheese and the concept of terroir, which means that each place has a specific taste that comes through in the wine and the cheese and, you know, everything that's from that place, which is a really cool concept for someone who grew up on a farm and hates to buy blueberries in the grocery store because she doesn't know where they're coming from. This is true. It pains me. Even when I like can't get them from my family's farm. So it had been kind of like in the back of my head that, oh, you know, this would be like a cool thing to do maybe eventually. But then, you know, probably about we had been here for about 4 or 5 months and gotten a little bit more settled. And it was like, okay, you know, you should probably start thinking about like what you're going to do here. Thankfully, the visa that my husband has also allows me to work. So it wasn't a question of like, being allowed to work. It's like, okay, like what can you do? And, you know, kind of came to a few different realizations. The first is that in the field that I was in before in marketing and events, to get a job in that in Toulouse, it's pretty much required that you speak fluent French. You know, English is a plus, obviously, but if you're not fluent, like in French, yeah, it's probably not going to happen. And so kind of anything in that was out. Most people in my situation would teach English, which I could do with that. I could do that with some training. I studied English at university, so it wouldn't be a far stretch. But to teach English here in France, at least where we are, most people aren't getting full-time teaching contracts. And so you're teaching English as a freelancer. You know, you're having to spend a lot of time getting clients and finding contracts and all of those kind of things and essentially running your own business. And I said, you know, if I have to start a business to be able to work here to do something, I don't really want to spend all of that time doing it on something that I'm not passionate about. I want to do something that is going to make, you know, it's going to be a lot of hard work, and I want to do something that is going to make it worth it for me. And so that's kind of how Taste of Toulouse was born, is because I realized that, you know, my passions for wine and cheese also kind of fit what I saw as a need here in Toulouse. Because when we moved here, there was really no way for English speakers to learn about the food and the food culture here. And so I kind of started Taste of Toulouse to give people the experience that I wish I would have had when I first moved here, to be able to go to the markets and to be able to ask questions and not feel awkward. Like, okay, what am I missing? Like, you know, frantically watching other people to see like what they're doing and then like copying them and, you know, not knowing the vocabulary and being like, okay, sure, like I'll have this thing, but I don't really know what it is, you know, just like pointing at things. So you know, to go with people and say, oh yeah, you know, this is what the locals do. This is what you can ask for. Here are some of the typical products. You know, I recognize not everybody has an interest in learning French or is able to learn French, but like, here's some really good vocabulary and things that you might want to know if you're going to the markets that you might hear if you're if that interests you. And, you know, this is what the locals do when they go to the market, you know. Oh, the guys behind us over here at the wine bar that we're hanging out at, they're here every day and they're drinking the same wine every day, you know? So kind of, you know, giving people that local experience and helping them to feel comfortable in that place and feel like then they could go on and replicate it and go back to the market and do the same thing themselves. That's like, for me, the best feeling is when one of my guests emails me back and says like, thank you so much for those recommendations. We went back there the next day again and like got more wine and cheese, and your suggestions really helped. And we felt like so much more comfortable, and we were able to, you know, take what we learned in your tour and then go and continue exploring.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. You can go into the wine shop and the cheese shop and buy the one in the blue packet because
right.
It looks prettier. Mm-hmm. But if you know, you're going to serve it, you want to know a little bit more, mm-hmm. like what it goes with. I understand that completely. And the language can be a barrier. And also just, I don't know, I think maybe sometimes you don't want to look like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
You get so in your own mm-hmm. head that you're like, everybody else knows what they're doing and I'm over here, the weird tourist.
And, you know, it's, I tell this to my guests, but the shopping patterns and the way we shop for things in the US and in the UK is very different than how people shop for things in France. You know, I feel like a lot of times in the US, people are really almost afraid of asking questions because number one, they don't know if the person behind the counter is really well-trained. Like, are they actually going to know what they're talking about? And number two, because they don't want to look stupid. But here in France, people that work in especially like specialty food retail at wine shops, at cheese shops, they're trained. They have gone to school for these. These people have degrees in these things. And so they have a lot of knowledge that they want to help their clients use. And so here in France, it's actually more a sign of being educated when you can ask questions than
that's good to know,
you know, than just not asking questions, like, because they want to answer those questions. They want to give you their knowledge.
That is good to know. So that's like a tip. Don't mm-hmm. be afraid to ask questions if you are visiting the market.
And don't be afraid to ask for recommendations.
Super. Super. Okay. So when did your business begin to feel like a business? What was the thing that made it?
Good question. I think for me, I think probably when I had been maybe I think it was around March of last. So I started in November and so we had, and that's like really the slow tourist season in Toulouse. I mean, we're in the south of France, so it's not cold compared to like Chicago, for example, but it's cooler.
Right.
It's not the greatest weather. People don't really come here then. So I had started like right at the beginning of the slow season. And so it didn't really start like picking up for me until about March, I think, where I started to actually like have a decent amount of like tours every week where I had maybe at least one or two tours every week. And I was kind of coming on a more regular basis and I was starting to, you know, I have notifications on my phone, you know, for when people buy tours. They come into my email and into my like credit card processing app. And so they get a notification. So I know every time somebody buys a ticket and it started to just kind of like happen spontaneously. Maybe more than just like once a week. And I was like, oh wow. Like people, this is like, maybe this is actually going to work and be, you know, it's starting to move a little bit more, getting into like the warmer months here. So
when you started, did you like try it out with a group of friends first?
Oh yes, absolutely. So kind of the first step of putting together my tour was doing the shopping myself, testing out all of the businesses, kind of anonymously. Like, you don't want to go into a place and be like, hey, I'm starting a food tour. Like, do you want to do it? You want to go in, you build a relationship with them. You use them for your own shopping because you want to make sure that not only do they have good quality products, but they also have good customer service. Like, is this a place that I want to shop as a shopper? And then once you start like getting to know them, then you maybe approach them and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking of doing this food tour. This is what I'm thinking. Like, are you interested in participating? So my main food tour is in a market. So it's a public space. Mm-hmm. And the businesses in there have, you know, counters and stalls. And so it's a little bit different, like going through the market versus like bringing someone into a business. Where if I'm bringing them into someone's business, of course you always ask first. But in the market, you can be a little bit more like trying a few different places out with groups and see how they go and how they respond. And, you know, some of the businesses I have a much closer relationship with if I'm asking something more of them, where I maybe want the business owner to do some explaining if they speak English, or I want them to reserve me a place at the wine bar. And they know like what kind of wine I want and all of those kind of things. But some of them I just go and we buy things while we're in the market. And so those ones, it's a little bit more flexible. So when I first started, I approached the businesses where I really wanted them to have like be an integral part in the tour and said, you know, this is what I'm thinking. Are you okay with that? Like, what do you think? And most, like, they were all like, oh, that sounds really interesting. Like, we could do that. And so then I did probably at least three test tours with friends or friends of friends to get feedback, and kind of took them through the tour, kind of did everything how I would do for a normal group. And then at the end, I asked them to fill out a survey for me and said, hey, you know, what did you think of this? Like, are there things that I can do better? What was your favorite thing? What was your least favorite thing? You know, if you had paid for this tour, like what kind of a rating would you give me on TripAdvisor? Those kind of things. I also made sure to include French people on my tours. I have quite a few friends in Toulouse who have partners who are French. And so I made sure all of my tours, my tours are for all English speakers. Anybody that speaks English can come on my tour. Including French people. And so I really like always want to get French people on my tours when I'm testing them to be like, hey, what do you guys think of this? Do you feel like this is an accurate reflection? Does this reflect your experience as a local here? Does you feel like it reflects your culture? Like, you know, what do you think as a French person of how I'm presenting this? You know, because you know, I've done a lot of research. As I said, I worked in a cheese and wine shop. I'm also a certified French wine scholar. I've done a lot of research, but I always want to check in and be like, what do you guys think of this? You know, because I'm always coming at it from an American perspective. And I know that. I think the unique thing that I can bring is like helping Americans to understand a French perspective. Because I can explain it from this is where we're different and here's maybe some of the reasons why, instead of a French person saying, but this is just how we do things.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know, so, but I still want to check in with them and be like, hey, what do you guys think?
No, absolutely. So you're sort of like the catalyst or the middle lady who's like, okay, this
right.
is common ground. Mm-hmm. And this means
cool. You know, this is one of the some of the things I tell people is like, Google Translate is great. But here's some of the things that you want to look out for. you know, like here's some of the words that just don't really translate well. Yeah. So, you know, things that you wouldn't think of.
Exactly. Exactly. So now what? So two questions. What new skills did you have to learn for your business now? And how many of your skills were interchangeable from your former career?
Oh, wow. So, you know, I think like as an entrepreneur, one of like the skills that I have had to work on most, is emotional intelligence. Because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you can ask other people for advice and you can figure out how to do the things that you need to do. You can figure out how to navigate the bureaucracy and, you know, you can find all different kinds of advice for things. But if, as an entrepreneur, you can get into a lot of trouble really quickly. Because if you're kind of letting what's going on dictate how you're feeling, you know, it's just so many ups and downs all the time. And I kind of constantly have to remind myself, you know, like just because I'm feeling really discouraged right now doesn't mean that I haven't accomplished anything, or just because I'm feeling really like, you know, stressed out about certain things like that, you know, what I'm feeling is not the reality. And so like as an entrepreneur, to me, like having a really solid grasp on your emotions and what you're feeling and being really self-aware, how like actions outside are affecting your emotions, but then also how your emotions are affecting your perception of things is so important. Yeah. So that's like one of the skills I've really had to work on a lot. and as for everything else, you know, some of my friends and some of the people I've worked with in the past, you know, when they see like what I'm doing here, they're like, oh my gosh, this is kind of, it just seems like the culmination of like everything that you've ever done. Because I, so at university, I was an English major and I had minors in history in theater. You know, so there's kind of a lot of research and storytelling and history involved, but also very much like performance aspect. You know, as a tour guide, you are performing. Yeah. You know, you're performing some version of yourself, yes, but like it's definitely like a performance, and there's definitely showmanship that you need to have. You know, so like that gets roped in, and then, you know, my background. And then also, you know, from working in Chicago with all of the small businesses, this like deep love and appreciation for small businesses and the knowledge of how important they are in communities. And so, you know, one of my huge like pillars is, you know, supporting all of the small businesses here in Toulouse. And making sure that, you know, they benefit when I'm doing my tours, and that, you know, I'm not shy about where I take people on my tours, because those are the best places. I want people to know that they're the best places. And I'm never like, oh, you know, like keep this a secret. Like this is a secret location. No, it's not a secret. Like these businesses have worked really hard to be as good as they are. And I want to shout it from the rooftops how awesome they are. You know, so kind of the twin pillars, I say, of my business are this love and passion for food and love and passion for small businesses. And that's kind of been just like those things of, I don't know, just a culmination of like my whole life.
So I would like you to tell me your social media handles and your website and how people can find out more about you and your business.
Absolutely. So you can find me online at tasteoftoulouse.com. I'm on Instagram at Taste of Toulouse. I'm also on Facebook, Taste of Toulouse. So those are really the places where you can find me.
Thank you. That was really cool. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I'm excited.